sack. Is that all you get for your money? And if that's what you have in mind, yeah, if that's what you're all about, good luck moving up, 'cause I'm moving out.
Good morning and welcome to Oklahoma Real Estate on the Move on this wonderful spring morning. And we had Good Friday yesterday. We're going to have Easter Sunday tomorrow. That's springtime. That's not usually when you think about insulation, but that's when you need to be thinking about insulation and weatherization of your property. So before the heat of the summer beats down on you and your home, I want to bring to you a couple people that are experts in weatherization, and that is Todd and Jesse Cox. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Okay. Now, you guys have been guests before, and I learned a lot. I want to learn more. The thing that surprised me is your background. What did you do during your prime? Yeah, you kind of look like you're still in your prime, but okay. but you had a regular job, and you're already retired.
I retired 8 years ago from Oklahoma City Fire Department. Was a hazmat technician, 22 years job. And just kind of bring that expertise to the table. I'm always thinking about health and safety for people, so that's just part of my makeup.
Okay. So you were a firefighter?
Yes.
Okay. Right here in the city?
Yes, ma'am.
I'm going to ask you what kind of training you have to take to be a firefighter.
Well, it starts out, you do some training through OSU Tech here in Oklahoma City. And you receive fire service training, fire science. EMT training was part of it when I was on. A lot of the fellows now are paramedics as they come on. I elected to go into the hazmat group as well, so we had hazardous materials training throughout my whole career.
And that expertise is what has been the inspiration behind your second venture in life.
Yes. About seventh year on the job, I started Weatherization Experts in 1998, and we do insulation and weatherization programs. We do thermal diagnostics with thermal imaging.
So most firefighters have a second job.
Yeah. We kind of joke around and say we just have to be busy doing something.
Yeah. Yeah. So, well, and the thing is that you're most firefighters, I would dare say all firefighters that are active on the job, are physically strong and mentally alert and very good decision makers in the spur of the moment.
Well, you do that or you die.
Yeah, there you go. Okay. Jesse, tell me about your training.
Well, I've been brought up in this company, and I've been doing it for 20 years, even though I'm only 24. Through the years, I've learned a lot in this industry, and I've gone through some training on home energy efficiency. And my father here, he's a HERS, or had been a HERS Raider, and he's trained that through me as well. And in the future, we're looking for, I'm likely going to be BPI certified, and that will be further education, and even we can pass that on to our crew.
Boy, you'd probably vote for something. I'm on the MLS committee, which is Multiple Listing Service committee. And one of the things that we have thought about over the years is to add the HERS rating to our required data. Well, that's impossible at this point because nobody knows what their HERS rating is unless they're building an Energy Star home and they have it tested. That's kind of expensive. So tell me, what is a HERS rating?
A HERS rating, you have a qualified person that's a HERS rater. It's the Home Energy Efficiency Rating System, basically. So a home can be tested to get a rating on how energy efficient it is by HERS rater.
HERS is spelled? It's an acronym.
Yes, it's H-E-R-S.
Okay. And it's just like his, but it's HERS,
exactly.
Right?
Yes.
Right. Okay. And so, again, that stands for?
Home Energy Rating System.
Okay. And what are the kind of range of numbers you use in HERS?
It's kind of more on a scale. You know, it's in 2005, I did not keep up my certification because I'd elected to do to other things. And so the rating system has changed over the years, but essentially it's kind of like going to the doctor and getting a checkup and a performance check. They'll do a blower door on the home and basically pull a vacuum on the home and quantify how much air leaks in and out of the home. And that's one of the thresholds they have to meet, is about a 35% threshold, which is pretty difficult unless you know strategically where to do the air sealing and such.
Okay. Now, some homes, some of the newer homes are actually too tight and they do not have enough outside air coming in. That's rare, but it happens. And in that case, they literally have to put in a vent to bring outside air in. Have you run across that?
Yes, that's an energy recovery ventilator. And how that works is it pulls outside air, runs across a desiccant wheel, takes the humidity out, exchanges the heat or cold, whichever's taking place, back to the air that's going out. So it's a little chamber and a fan, that, and they work at about 80% efficiency, and it's a way to bring in fresh air and still keep control of the indoor environment.
Okay. So, and needless to say, you're pretty much an expert at energy efficiency in homes.
Yes, and there's some passive ways to do that energy recovery ventilation system as well. We've got a couple other tricks up our sleeve that we've learned over the years in building science.
So like it's bringing, not bringing fresh air in?
Yes.
Well, have children.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
They bring fresh air in every time they open the door.
We've
right?
thought about installing revolving doors. It'd be a little more efficient on the front of a house with kids.
For sure. The few homes that are lived in by a relatively active family need anything like fresh air ventilation coming in.
That's correct.
Okay. Well, we can agree to that for sure. So you started something called Weatherization Experts.
Yes. In 1998, we actually started and we were insulation experts. But around 2009, we realized there was a lot of discussion about weatherization. And so on 2009, we just changed our name. We weren't that well known, and so it was a way to step over into a kind of a bigger arena.
Right. Okay. Because you're retired at that point, and you can actually take your company to a bigger level.
Yes.
Okay. Well, I'm going to remind you who I'm talking to. I am talking to Todd and Jesse Cox of Weatherization Experts. I'm going to give you their phone number, which is 392-3764. It's 392-3764. We're going to return with our weatherization experts and ask them the hard questions right after this on Oklahoma Real Estate on the Move, News Radio 1000 KTOK. Welcome back to Oklahoma Real Estate on the Move. You're listening to Becky Ivins, broker of Movers Real Estate Company. Been in business since 1977. And just like you, Jesse, they should not have let me start in preschool, right?
I agree.
Jesse started at age 4 because he hung out with his dad, his dad knew what he was doing and was an expert in it, and you just soaked up the knowledge.
Absolutely.
So, but you've become an educated guy, and you know what you're doing. You proved that last segment because you were just spouting off all this stuff that I was going, wow, he does know what he's doing. So that's terrific. I want to just talk just a minute about your company. Just what do you do? You're called Weatherization Experts. Do you know what that reminds me of? It reminds me of one of my favorite charities, which is Rebuilding Together. That's an organization that helps the 55 or 60 or something like that population and up, the senior population. It helps keep them safe, warm, and dry. They do those. They will do home repairs for seniors who own their home but cannot afford. Or don't know, sometimes they can even afford it. They just don't know what to do to keep themselves safe, warm, and dry. So they just kind of bolster up. They don't go remodel a kitchen for somebody, but they will patch a roof. They will install a ramp and Rebuilding Together. Okay, see, my kudos. I have their trophy on my trophy case because we won their what do they call that? That race where you take the soapbox derby thing, where you build a car and you go down a hill?
Yes.
We were the winners of that.
Wow.
Yeah, I know. So that was pretty cool. And ours looked like a TIE fighter. So, okay. So tell me about your company and what it does. Does it help keep people safe, warm, and dry?
Absolutely. Our goal is to help a homeowner be more energy efficient and more comfortable, whether they're building a new home or have an existing. We have the opportunity to allow a free service for them if they wanted to take advantage of it, where we bring a thermal imager out if they have an existing home and kind of go over what they can do to save energy. They can even call us and consult us to what they can do to save energy on their home or become more comfortable. And we refer out certain contractors if there's something that's outside of our scope. But we're out there just to pretty much provide a free education and make sure that everybody can get that opportunity to have a more energy efficient home.
Okay. Now I'm going to open up a can of worms, Jesse. You ready? What would you charge on a home inspection? Some home inspectors use a little bit of thermal imaging. Most do not. And so, and think about this. Don't say free, because you might have a bunch of these to do after we recommend this. But if you're buying a home, and whether it's new or existing, what do you do on your if someone wants to be sure that it is insulated?
Yes, we offer that service. If someone's looking to buy a home, we charge about $125 where we can bring our camera out and kind of go over what we see on that home. Now, we're not inspecting the home. We're not an official home inspector, and that's not what we're in the work line of work, at least. But we will give you our honest opinion of what we find and what could be improved and what might be wrong with the home, if there is anything. And we always make sure that homeowner that's looking for, in the prospect of buying that home, has a realistic expectation of what that home is actually, you know, what's average, what's normal, and what can be improved. Is this below average, or should we look into another option?
Well, and that would not literally be a part of the home inspection on a normal home, because that's an energy feature. It's not structural. It's not electrical. It's not plumbing. But that would give the homeowner an idea of what it might cost them to operate on a monthly basis on utilities, and whether or not they might have a cold room or a hot room. I've worked with a couple of builders that one of them, his daughter's room was cold. And he did he was like sealing the windows and doing everything. And he could not get, he was working with it. HVAC company, and finally they did a thermal imaging on it, and the people that had insulated the attic had missed that room. It was a roof structure change in the attic, and that can happen pretty often, and insulated the room and he was fine, and his daughter could live. I mean, she was like living in a different part of the house because it was too cold in her room. So that, I mean, we could have caught that if you'd done the
Absolutely.
Thermal imaging.
We find that a lot. And more often than people realize, it's a thermal issue rather than HVAC. And it can absolutely be HVAC. But most of the time it is a thermal issue. And that camera that we use, that's how we detect those maybe issues that are hidden.
Right. Another builder, good builder, that does great insulation, has a long time reputation. I sold his own home for him that he had only lived in a couple years, because that's what builders do. And there was no insulation in the attic at all. Now here's how that turned out, or how that happened actually, is that was left on, the utilities never got changed over to his name. They just stayed on the company books. So his bookkeeper was paying the bills and didn't really know. She paid so many bills on so many different buildings and stuff that she didn't notice that one was really, really high. But, you know, that insulation is the last thing you put in the attic. That's the very last thing you do to a house.
Mm-hmm.
Because the inspectors have to inspect what's under that insulation.
Yes.
So that last step just never got done. And that cost them quite a lot. I can't imagine that they were, well, it had a two-story above it, which is probably what saved them from being very, very uncomfortable in that home.
Yes.
So, okay. So what other companies do insulation? What kind of sets you guys apart?
I would say it's probably the prep work that we do. I mean, initially on an existing home, what sets us apart is the thermal imaging, like we've been discussing. We've found many, many times that problem, like you've described, either missing insulation completely or a room that was inaccessible after it was sheetrocked, so there's no way to actually visually inspect it from an attic standpoint, but an imager will reveal that. So it's a great thing, tool to have.
Do you have to tear it apart to put insulation in then?
Sometimes. We have some really good strategies. Sometimes we, if there's, you know, a closet upstairs, in other words, a master bedroom, for instance, in this one house we did up in Edmond, they couldn't get their master bedroom comfortable. They tried everything, been calling several different heat and air people. They didn't put a window unit in, you know, a high-end home. That seems kind of crazy. But as soon as we brought the imager in, we saw that the room was not insulated. We found a closet upstairs that was adjacent to that attic space. Roofline kept us from getting there, and that's why it happened that way, is it wasn't insulated ahead of sheetrock in the room, thinking that there would be access later, I guess, is what someone was thinking. And we just cut a hole through the closet, got inside, did our work, came back out, patched the hole. Nobody knew any different.
Okay. The homeowner knew the difference when they paid the utility bill the next month. Yeah. So we're talking to Jesse and Todd Cox from Weatherization Experts, and we are going to return with more right after this break on Oklahoma Real Estate on the Move, News Radio 1000 KTOK. Welcome back to Oklahoma Real Estate on the Move. We appreciate you just kind of staying tuned in here. You know something? It's time for our word of the day.
All right.
Mama, come on, baby, tell me what's the word I write up. Everybody say, when you hear the call, you've got to get it underway.
Our word of the day is brought to you by Robbins Roofing, where their word every day is trust. You can trust Robbins Roofing to help you select the right material for your roof, to do a small repair, replace a whole roof, whether it's residential or commercial. They can handle your insurance claim with expertise and get you plenty of extra money that you might, your insurance company might not want to include on your claim. Robbins Roofing, 728-3700. Our word today is
weatherization.
Weatherization. So weatherization, kind of a word that would mean the same, would sort of be weatherproofing, right?
Yes.
Okay. So that's the practice of protecting a building and its interior from the elements, particularly from sunlight, precipitation, and wind. So weatherization is modifying a building to reduce energy consumption and optimize energy efficiency. So weatherization, and you guys are weatherization experts. So I'm going to give your number out just so that people can know who to call if they want to. It is 392-3764. And then I'm going to ask you a few things. What steps should a homeowner take to reduce their energy cost? What can they do themselves?
Well, something they can do themselves is there's a couple things. Some people are more capable than others, but I want to try to pick something that's really simple. One thing would be if you have attic access there, that you in your heat and air units upstairs, you could seal the ductwork at the unit, and I feel like that's something almost anybody can do. And if you're not capable of that, you could consult us with that, a heat and air guy, or maybe even a handyman that can address that. But there's ductwork that's attaching to the unit, and each area where that ductwork is attached could be leaking. If you're leaking air in that regard, that's consuming a lot more energy than most people realize.
It's not very uncommon to have a home inspection and find out that there is a total breach in that ductwork up in an attic. to where you're just sending cold air in the winter, in the summertime into the attic, and they keep calling the heat and air guys out to put more of their Puron or Freon or whatever it is in their system.
Mm-hmm.
And they're really, their attic's very comfortable because they're pumping a lot of refrigerated air up there, right?
You might tell them about the one yesterday.
Oh, yes. I recall yesterday that our crew was working on a little home in, I think, Del City it was. Well, it's got the record. It's the worst ductwork we've ever found. It was disconnected pretty much on both sides, from the unit all the way to the next, you know, at the ceiling register, almost on every ceiling register. And so the homeowner, actually it was a renter's home, so the tenant, last summer, the unit never turned off. It just continued to run. Well, this was the reason why, between the ductwork being basically off and not effective, and there was very little insulation too. So we fixed that ductwork because it was pulling air out of the house and just dispersing it into basically outside. Therefore, there's inherent issues with doing that as well. It's pulling a negative pressure on the home. Not only are you losing the air that you paid to heat or cool, but you're bringing in unconditioned air as well, which is a vicious cycle. The efficiency is lost completely.
Well, not just the efficiency. How about wearing out your equipment?
Absolutely. That was one of the most important things to the owner of the property. Is he just replaced that unit not too long ago, and he doesn't want this to be worn out. He's had past experience of a unit and just not turning off. It would wear prematurely.
Well, of course it would. If it stays on all the time, it might. Because, I mean, I don't know how long your heat and air units work on average, but they're not on it even half the time, probably not even a quarter of the time. How do you have a clue on that, Todd?
That would be correct. If you're properly insulated, then the thing should cycle, even on the hottest day of the year. I think the building science industry tries to design homes, heating and air units, where they'll run about 95% of the time on the hottest day of the year. So in that regard, then you're getting the maximum efficiency and you're not oversizing the unit. But I would say on average, it should run about 20 minutes and stay off 40. I think that happens indicative of the types of insulation that we do.
So 25 to 30% of the time in that range, 35 maybe,
that'd be symptomatic of a pretty good efficiency on that. However, we do have many clients tell us that their unit will run nonstop from sunup until about midnight in the summertime. So that's indicative of something's wrong. It's usually insulation.
Yeah. I mean, it could be that it's just a grossly undersized unit for the space. I know I've gone out on listings and the house will be 4,000 square feet and have one unit. And they'll go, yeah, but it's like a really big unit. Well, the biggest residential unit is a 5-ton unit.
Mm-hmm.
And that, in the olden days, you would say 500 or 600 square feet
per ton
would work. That was an 8-foot ceiling, and they were not real well insulated homes. So now we have better insulated homes and higher ceilings, so you can still run 500 or 600 square feet of floor space, but your cubic footage is higher on that, right?
Right. And the most common thing we actually see is somebody might have a properly sized unit to the home, a 4-ton for like a, you know, 2,000 square foot home, but we actually see the returns are undersized, and so, or not enough returns. So that's probably the most in.
Or the returns common. Have a couch sitting right up next to them,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And they don't really get to pull the air back in there. So, and another thing is just the filters.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Oh, my goodness.
There's quite a science behind that.
Yeah, right. But how often should you change your filters on a normal basis, do you think?
That's a loaded question. It depends on many factors. If you have pets in the home, kids in the home, you know, what type of – if you have carpet, there's all these type of things that clog up filters. But
well,
carpet's
your biggest filter in your home.
Yes.
Right?
Yep. Ask any good carpet cleaner. Just probably look at the filter and see if it's starting to try and cave in. If there's a layer of dirt across it, obviously it's not going to move much air across it, and that makes it very hard on your heat and air unit.
I would say probably change it before it starts caving in.
Yeah.
But we change ours every 3 months,
mm-hmm.
like clockwork.
Great rule of thumb.
And, I mean, filters don't cost much.
Right.
I mean, they're $2 or less usually for a filter, and just keep them clean. And that helps on the energy efficiency and on your equipment. There's different types of insulation. Could we talk about the different types and the goods and the bads about that, Jesse?
Sure.
How about it?
Currently on the market, there are basically three. We got cellulose insulation, we got fiberglass insulation, and we got the spray foam, which is really, really popular. It's regarded as the highest shelf, but we have a differing opinion on that. But you also have older insulation that's not installed today anymore, which is Rockwool insulation, and you even have vermiculite occasionally, which is really, really rare, and unfortunately should be removed if you find it. But on the market,
vermiculite?
Vermiculite was manufactured, I believe, if I'm getting my dates correctly, between the 20s and the early 50s. And it was...
Oh, like 1920.
1920.
To 1950s.
Yes. It's not very, very common in our region, but it does exist.
Is that like little balls of styrofoam?
Not styrofoam, but it is minerals that basically they popped like popcorn. And it was contaminated potentially with asbestos.
Oh.
And if you ever find that, there's actually a cool thing. There's a trust out there that you can have it removed and replaced for, basically, they'll pay for it. So if anybody had vermiculite, that's you've won the lottery on insulation pretty much, because you can have a free replacement. But on today's insulation, we have, like I mentioned, fiberglass insulation, cellulose insulation, and spray foam insulation. And as the performance of those three, fiberglass is going to be your entry level. It's the lowest performing. It's the builder's grade is what we kind of refer to it as, and that's what you most commonly find because it is the most economical, if you will. But we try to not even use fiberglass because we feel like it just doesn't perform very well, so therefore we don't want to install it. Spray foam and cellulose, at least open cell spray foam and cellulose insulation, have a very similar performance.
That spray foam stuff, though, didn't it end up having formaldehyde in it?
The early years with the injection foam had formaldehyde. That you would retrofit, basically. You drill a hole in the wall and inject the foam into the wall. That was an injection foam. They don't really have that on the market anymore for the most part. It's not popular, at least in our area. They have alternatives to that now that are still injection foams. Some of them are cement-based. But the foams that are most popular are spray foams that are either open cell or closed cell. But they're formaldehyde free. But the issue that we find with it is there's a really big fire hazard with the spray foams.
Todd, you're a fire expert. Is there really an issue with that spray foam? Because I'll tell you, there's a lot of pluses to that. I mean, you can walk into someone's attic that has that spray foam, and it feels almost like the house. It is very good insulator. But is it a fire hazard?
Most definitely. In fact, Jesse could probably cite a little better on the 2018 code that's coming out for the International Building Code for home building. It's going to be a requirement to have the spray foams have a protective barrier over them, such as our product, a cellulose type of a product, or a mineral-based, which would be like a rock wool product sprayed over it. Because they're finding that the ignition barriers that were supposed to be used in the past, usually they're a blue or green color you should see sprayed on an attic. If you go into somebody's attic and you see just the foam and it's yellow, that was done incorrectly.
Okay. I can just hear a lot of people out there going, "Argh." Okay. We've got some important information coming up for you guys, so you need to stay tuned, because if your house was built between 1920 and 1950, we're going to give you important information about that. If you walk out into your attic and you see yellow foam sprayed on your rafters, basically, and on your roof, we're going to give you important information about that. So we'll be back right after this with our smoking hot deals and important information for you about your safety when it concerns insulation, with more on Oklahoma Real Estate on the Move, News Radio 1000 KTOK. Welcome back to Oklahoma Real Estate on the Move. You are listening to Becky Ivins, broker of Movers Real Estate, and we have our weatherization experts here talking about safety and insulating your home and the different types of insulation, and we're going to get right to that. We are talking about some things that are pretty important. So, Jesse, I'm going to have you just start spouting off what we promised the folks they would hear.
Well, one of the topics we went over was vermiculite insulation. There's different brands. The most common brand is going to be Zonolite of that vermiculite type of insulation. It's not a very effective insulation. It wasn't good at all to begin with.
What does it look like?
It looks like gravel, if you will, in the attic, or sand. And it looks pretty odd, and it's almost like sand if you were to move it. It just is real granular and real flowy. And it's usually only going to be about 2 to 3 inches thick, and it's only an R10.
I got to ask you this. We sold a house, a couple of houses, that they did some remodel on, and they couldn't seem to get electrical run. They were like changing some stuff because these were old houses. They were on acreages, and it was reported that they had sand in the walls. And I said, they've got a bunker? I mean, did we list a bunker? Because that's what I thought about. I thought, well, they must be afraid somebody's going to come by and shoot them, and that'll slow down the bullet or something.
Most likely it was vermiculite. If you were to put a hole in the bottom of the wall, it would sift out. It would just pour out like sand. It was not a good idea to put it in a wall, because if you were to ever put any type of hole in the sheathing or the plaster and lath, probably in that older home, maybe the drywall, it would sift out of the wall, and it won't stay put, and it would settle over time a little bit because
it does.
It's just sand, pretty much.
Okay. So if someone has that type of insulation, if you've been in your attic, it looks like someone put sand or little tiny gravel up there, will you guys come out and check it out for them?
Yeah, we'll come out and check it. Usually there's the opportunity to have a trust. There's a trust that exists to pay to remove it and replace it with a new modern material, and we recommend cellulose insulation. But you kind of have to prove that you have that Zonolite brand, and usually you'll find bags of it in the attic. They just usually leave the trash, if you will, throughout the insulation, because the way it was installed in the past was they would open a bag and just pour it out. They weren't blowing it. They weren't doing anything like that. They were just walking through the attic and open the bag and allow it to just sift into the floor of the attic. Well,
and it would, right?
Yes.
Because it would. Okay. Well, so you can help them with that.
Yes, we can remove it. The insulation that we recommend going back with is cellulose insulation.
Now, why do you recommend that?
It's got a lot of positive attributes. Not only is it very effective, it's got a really high performance. Its R value is 3.8 per inch, which is actually a little bit better than open cell spray foam. It also is class 1A fire rated. It's treated with boron to become class 1A fire rated. Also, it deters insects and mice, and mold won't grow on it either.
Okay, now that's just weird to me. Because cellulose is like a paper product.
Yes.
So to me, I'm thinking fire danger would be high, mouse danger would be high, termite danger would be high, because you're dealing with a cellulose product.
Yes, yeah, naturally it would be. If it was untreated, it would be a terrible thing to put in the attic. But because it's treated with boron, those added attributes are very real, and they're lifetime guarantee. The boron that's added to the material won't leave the product the way it's installed and combined with the fiber. It has all those attributes, and they're very positive. Mice, it really does deter mice because it dries their skin out. The boron is a desiccant, so they don't want to burrow in it, and mold won't grow on anything that's treated with boron as well.
Wow. So that just, I mean, it's totally opposite of what I would have expected, all due to boron, which is like an element on our periodic table back in chemistry, right?
It is, exactly. Yes. And not all cellulose insulation is made the same. There is a cheaper version of the product, if you will, that we always commonly refer to, and it's treated with ammonium sulfate as a chemical. It passes the fire test, and it's allowed on the market, but you know, it has some negative attributes because of that. So if you ever hear kind of bad about cellulose insulation, it was likely because it was treated with that chemical ammonium sulfate. It has the potential of off-gassing ammonia if it got wet, and that's something we've always avoided. We only use 100% boron treated cellulose.
Well, that would stink, too.
It would, yes.
Right?
Yes.
Okay.
In the early years of cellulose, they would just grind up newspaper untreated, put it in an attic, and it was really powdery. But now new manufacturing, it gets a lot of coverage. It's manufactured in a better form with newer manufacturing equipment, and it'll never settle.
I just had a light bulb go off. One time we had a smell in a house that we were selling that was awful, and no one could figure out where it was. I thought, oh, someone just has not put water down their drains, so the sewer smell comes back up.
Right.
We couldn't figure it out, and we finally got someone in there, and they said, oh, the insulation is wet. I assumed it was full of mouse pee because it stunk so bad, but it was probably the cellulose insulation that had the
ammonium sulfate. We don't ever recommend that. It still exists on the market. Some of them had manufactured it improperly where they accidentally put too much ammonium sulfate, and that's where you'll actually find that there's a true issue. They put a moderate amount now, or allowed amount. But if it was older, they may have manufactured it improperly and have way too much ammonium sulfate added to the product.
Okay. So what else did we promise the people that we would tell them?
Well, were we referring to the spray foam? And it's real popular to attach it to the roof line, and it's called a envelope system is what a lot of people commonly refer to it as. It has to be installed correctly as far as to resist fire. And the current code wants to have spray foam sprayed over with a fire ignition barrier. Well, they're finding out that's not working quite well enough, and if it was done at all. So the new code coming up on the horizon wants it to be even further protected. And we don't even offer spray foam because we don't want to be a company that has a retired firefighter installing something that's flammable.
Yeah, that's kind of a bad deal, right? I'm going to give you the number because they can just call you to get the number of the trust, how to replace insulation and that kind of stuff. It is 392-3764, or even easier, just call me. 722-3232, and I'll give you the information. We'll return next week with more. Do call us if you need real estate help or if you want numbers that are my favorites. 722-3232. We'll see you next week with more on Oklahoma Real Estate on the Move.